This hour is brought to you by AlmostFreeTeeth.com. Save on dental implants today.
You say there's, you think there's going to be a lot more movement. There's kind of this idea out there now that teams in the top 10 might have a little bit harder time trading back. Do you see it that way? Or
Potentially. There's a lot of phone calls going on right now, so it's hard to tell today. But I think as we get closer, it'll start to show itself.
The Score Midday Show, 10 to 2 on 670 The Score.
Potentially. Mm-hmm. You never know what's going to happen on draft day, which is right around the corner. And by right around the corner, I mean it's coming up tomorrow. Mark Grody, Marshall Harris with you here on Score Middays, broadcasting live from the Score Hyundai Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers. And, you know, this is a thing that I've really been examining over the last week or so, Mark, as we get closer and closer, because I was like, maybe a trade will happen. I don't think a trade's happening before the actual draft or minutes leading up to the draft, based on what we're seeing and hearing. And I don't think the Bears should trade up, especially not for Ashton Jeanty. And I really don't think they should trade down either, is where I'm kind of landing on this, because I think they can get a good running back later in the draft because they do have 2 second round picks. I think line, whether it's offensive or defensive, you can make the argument either way, that should be their priority. The trenches is where you win this thing. And I've been asking the same question since I arrived in this city 4 years ago: who's getting to the quarterback? And that's why, from the time we had our production meeting at 9 a.m. this morning to now, I'm like, well, if Mason Graham is available at number 10, I'm going to roll with Mark Grody and say, you might want to just take that guy.
Yeah, you run to the podium. But hold on. Hold on just a second.
What are we holding on
Mr.
to?
Mr. Harris, hold on. What if, because it's all about what ifs, what if Mason Graham is still on the board at number 8 or at number 9 where the Saints are? Are you then still not giving up a second round pick or two to get Mason Graham on this team? You're not running up to that podium at that point?
You know why I'm not doing that?
Why?
Because those 2 second round picks, I believe the Bears, because this is what they told me at the owners meetings and since then even. Both Ben Johnson, both Ryan Poles said, and Ian Cunningham, I think, went ahead and tripled down on that yesterday. The Bears feel like they can get impact day one starters with their first 3 picks, if not with their first 4 picks.
Okay, so you would take two. You want the quantity over the quality.
I didn't say that. I think you can get good enough quality.
Good enough?
Picks 2 and 3.
Good enough. See, that is the flaw right there. You're right. You can get good enough with the 2 second round picks and the 3rd round picks. The Bears will tell you how great their 2nd round picks have been through the years. But if Mason Graham is available, and I'm not going to use the word generational, I'm just going to say the best defensive lineman in this draft for sure, you wouldn't move up and ditch one of those 2nd round picks to get Mason Graham on this team? I would.
Tell me why you don't have confidence that they can get good enough, as you said.
Well,
as I said.
Well, no, I think they can get good
linemen at the second round picks.
Because I want a great player, and I know, and you know what it looks like when this team has a stacked defensive line. And I'm not just saying, because Dave Wansa was correct. Watch the Philadelphia Eagles, what they did in the Super Bowl, all of that. Every team wants that. But let's look at what the Bears' defensive line actually is at this very moment.
I don't want to do that. I'm trying to keep this a positive show heading into the draft.
It's not all bad by any means. I mean, you do have Andrew Billings and Montez Sweat are really good players. Javon Dexter, eh. We know Zach Pickens had his problems last year. Dio Odangbo, we'll see. I mean, he doesn't strike me necessarily as a guy that we know exactly what kind of impact he is going to make. So if you were to trade up to get this, what I think could be a great player in Mason Graham, all of a sudden, everything else looks better. It's like adding an ace pitcher to a starting staff. Everybody all of a sudden falls into place. Montez Sweat is freed up. No more excuses with him being double-teamed and triple-teamed. Andrew Billings will be Billings. Now we can relax a little bit on Javon Dexter, and we don't have to say, you've got to be our 3 technique. Of course, they've got somebody that they signed
Grady
to be
Jarrett.
Grady Jarrett to be their 3 technique. So all of a sudden, you have an offensive line that you're kind of like, I'm not sure. You add Mason and Graham to, and you're like, yeah.
I'm already Here's why I'm already
okay,
okay. Okay.
You gave me I'm happy about that.
So listening to what you just said, here's what I find interesting and captivating about what you've just proposed to
and
me.
Hmm.
because I think it'll force this issue. Ryan Poles is the general manager. Ben Johnson is your freshly named head coach. Are you telling me that you think the Bears, with Ben Johnson as their new head coach, would be willing to say, number one, no to an offensive player with their first round pick? That's number one. That's number one. Number two, shortening their draft capital to go get a defensive player in Ben Johnson's first year as head coach.
No, number one, I don't think that this is the year that Ben Johnson has as much power as everybody thinks he does. Look, I get it. He should eventually. Ben Johnson has never been a head coach for one day in the National Football League. We don't know. He wasn't studying personnel while he was with the Detroit Lions. That's what Ryan Poles and his staff have been doing.
How's the studying been going?
As time goes on, I do believe that Ben Johnson will have more power and get into the ears of Ryan Poles and
Ian
Cunningham.
Already in Ryan Poles'
ears? Of course he is. They've said he's in their ears. I just don't think that this is the year where Ben Johnson gets to completely impose his will. The other part about this is, and you're saying that, like, Ben Johnson, why would he want a defensive player? Was he not there when they drafted Aiden Hutchinson and how well that has worked out? I think a good offensive guy knows how important a good defense is to the offense and how that impacts.
Was he there when they drafted Penei Sewell? I'm just curious.
I'm sure he was. Okay. And I'm sure that looks darling. I don't think he was there when they drafted Frank Ragnow, because that's like, what, 12 years ago
that
now?
That man's been doing his thing for
is
a minute.
Is he done? Is Dirty Frank Ragnow about done?
I don't know if he's done or not. I know
he's still really good. I'm just saying, like, I feel like he's been there forever.
He seems like he's still effective to me. Last I checked, I don't know if he's blue or he's red or orange or whatever color you want to put next to his grade.
Wani didn't mention him in his little centers production earlier.
He did not mention him.
That's true.
Drew Dahlman's great. I think, you know, I had this argument with a contributor to the show, Clay Harbor, because I told him, I was like, I think that center's more important than tackle. I wish I could just play that Wani clip back to him. And he's like, no, it's not tackled. I was like, bro, center, they are the brains of the operation. You need someone who can make things happen. So it's interesting, though, that you think that they would trade up to get Mason Graham if he falls to eight.
I would. Like, that is, like, I think, well, I'll tell you right now, okay, because I said this when we did the draft preview show the other night. I don't think they're going to move. I think that Mason Graham will be gone. I do think, because when Anthony and I did our little collaborative draft of the first 10 players, once we got to 10, man, there were so many players that were available. It was mind-boggling. And I think at that point, Anthony went offensive lineman. Tyler Warren was available by that point, so I did take Tyler Warren. So I did take an offensive player.
Oh, funny,
okay?
How that works.
Okay, but no, I said, look, if I had to choose between Mason Graham and Tyler Warren, I would choose Mason Graham.
If Ryan Poles with Ben Johnson and Dennis Allen in his ear,
absolutely,
had to choose between Tyler Warren and Mason Graham, do you believe he would choose Mason Graham? Know what you know
Dennis
about the
Allen
12 personnel? I'm saying Ryan Poles.
Oh, Ryan Poles?
He's the one. You told me these guys don't have as much power as I think they have.
It depends.
They're
who he's
in their Aaron Rodgers mode.
It depends who he's listening to. If you listened to Dennis Allen the other day, and this is conventional wisdom, but he was saying it, that ideally you want to use the inside pressure to really affect going after the court. It's what you do in a 4-3 defense. So he was basically saying, please draft Mason Graham. Who's he going to listen to? The guy, the veteran, two-time head coach in Dennis Allen, who is considered by many as one of the best defensive coordinators in the league, or the brainy offensive guy who comes in with an impact but has not coached a single game and has never put together a roster?
Let's try to get some clues here. Let's go back to Ian Cunningham speaking as the assistant general manager of the Bears yesterday at House Hall. He spoke much longer than Ryan Poles, the GM, did. It was kind of Ian Cunningham's time to shine in that light. He talked about what would actually prompt the Bears to move up in the draft.
You know, it depends. You know, it depends what the cost is, who the player is, the value, all those sorts of things. We're weighing those right now, but we'll see. We'll see come draft night.
What?
Okay, so there you have it. He said nothing there. Yeah,
he said absolutely nothing.
He said a whole lot of 10 seconds worth of, yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, it depends on the cost. Like, yeah, of course.
It's like if you ask a girl out and she's like, oh, yeah, we'll see. Yeah, maybe. what do you know?
Oh, wow. That's a pity. What does that mean?
That's never a positive thing, is
right.
It?
You know what that is? That's I'll call you, don't call me. Like, if I need you to stop on by, come on by. But otherwise, just let's stay out of this.
Oh, you're making house calls? I see you, Brody. Well, I see you.
You know, I
stop on by.
I mean, if I get a request, I'll be there, you know?
Marshall Harris hanging out with Mark Grody here on this Wednesday on Score Middays.
You wouldn't?
It depends. Depends on
Don't be resetting and changing the topic on me.
No, it just depends. I was told by my executive producer, Ray Diaz, we must reset.
I know.
And so I am
You're
resetting.
You're a good radio guy. You're a professional.
I'm trying to be.
Right, we'll talk about that later.
A reminder, we have Jed Hoyer coming up, so you don't want to go anywhere. He's coming up at 11:25. But between now and then, let's talk about this other news that we learned of yesterday. Well, I don't even know if it's news, because we have kind of conflicting stories about this, because the whole thing for me has been like, you need a left tackle. Might they already have their left tackle at Hallis Hall right now? Because there was talk about the potential move of one Darnell Wright from right tackle to left tackle. Here's what Ryan Poles had to say.
Ryan, as it relates to draft preparation, how do you view Darnell Wright? Do you see him exclusively on the right side, or are you open-minded to shifting him to the left if something materializes that would...
Yeah, I think that's a conversation. We'll see how everything goes. He clearly has the ability to play left and right. We saw that in college. That was part of the value in taking Darnell. So if he had to play left, I think he'd play left. And obviously, I think we're all excited about his stuff to go right.
If he had to play left, I think he could play left. Am I reading too much into that, saying it's a possibility, or is that in a pinch emergency situation?
Of course it's a possibility. It's not the most – and Ryan Poles was being very reserved in his tone yesterday, as probably not to tip us off, and he's usually pretty reserved in that regard as well. But it wasn't like, oh, yeah, this guy could play left tackle, no doubt about it. Basically what he was saying is they have not ruled out that possibility. And the question was actually asked directly to – Darnell Wright as well. He also did not say no. His answer was more of, hey man, we're just getting started. We'll see what happens here. So that possibility does exist. I'm not sure I'm a fan of it, because he has developed at a pretty good rate at the right tackle spot. And that's why I was trying to figure it out from Dave Wanstead. Like, how difficult is it to actually do that in the NFL? Because I don't know that answer. How difficult is it to go from right tackle to left tackle? And Dave Wanstead basically said, hey, man, these guys are more athletic than they've ever been. They should be able to do multiple things, like the way the Bears are doing multiple things with some of their defensive players. I don't like it, because he has been a good product over at that right tackle, and I think you could bring in a left tackle.
You're not the only one who doesn't like the idea. Listen to what Brad Biggs from the Chicago Tribune had to say on Mullion Hall this morning when asked about Darnell Wright possibly moving over to left tackle.
Darnell Wright possibly moving from right side to the left side. And if that... You're what? I didn't even ask a question yet. Why don't you buy him?
But I don't see any way Darnell Wright's going to left tackle. I don't.
So that's just something they threw out there that they're not considering.
They didn't throw it. They were asked, and they were like, "Well, yeah, you could." Like, it wasn't something that they threw out there. I don't view Darnell Wright as a left tackle.
Okay, I'm with Biggs time on this.
Biggs didn't even let David get the question off. He was already, I know where you're going with this. Let me stop you before you get to the pass and have a fork in the road. No, turn around. Go that way. Go that way.
Yeah,
Turn around.
I'm not nearly as sure as Biggs is about it. I personally just don't like the idea of it. And I don't know, maybe it's because I remember them screwing around with Kyle Long when Kyle Long was drafted as a guard. They put him at left tackle and moved him around. It just doesn't seem to work out well when you do that, especially and messing with a young, talented player in Darnell Wright.
Because you're
well.
Saying he's already in a good headspace. Why would you mess with what's already going well for you on an offensive line where there are so many questions, because that unit still has to gel with new players who haven't played with each other?
This is not the year to screw around. You know what I mean? Like, I'm trusting this offensive staff because it's Ben Johnson, and the resume says trust him in terms of the way he runs an offense, but I just don't think that's a great idea. And I know he did. Like, he played some left tackle at Tennessee. He played it in college, so it's not like he's incapable. It's not like he's unfamiliar, but I think at the NFL level, let's not mess around with changing a guy to the other side unless they deem it during OTAs and training camp to look really good, and I'll have eyes on, obviously, when we get to that point.
All right, it's interesting the way you're laying that out, because I just want to make sure that we're on the same page, because here's my question. If it's right now Braxton Jones, Kieran Amagaji in discussion for left tackle, plus whoever they draft, if we go with your whole Mason Graham, trade up to get him, lose one of your second-round picks, mind you, and I'm assuming it would be the first of the second round. I guess it's not a huge deal because they're so close together, but do you believe they can get a starting left tackle with that next pick?
That I don't know. I think my answer to that is you suck it up with the left tackle being Braxton Jones and hope that Karan Amagaji, like Karan Amagaji at this point, as per what Ryan Poles was saying to us when they drafted him, his indication was that it would be year two that he would be competing for left tackle or at least be the primary backup. It wasn't supposed to go down like it did last year. I mean, he was injured, missed training camp, which is huge for a rookie offensive lineman to have missed that. Obviously, when they dropped him in, it did not look good for Karan Amagaji. I'm not giving up on him yet. A third-round pick, I get it. He was out of Yale, but I think there is more to this guy. It's not the worst thing in the world to have Braxton Jones be your left tackle going into next season.
This segment brought to you by AlmostFreeTeeth.com. Save on dental implants today when we come back. Do we have a treat for you? Fresh off an exciting, exhilarating, thrilling 11-10 comeback win. We've got the Cubs president of baseball operations, Jed Hoyer, joining Mark Grody and me, Marshall Harris, here on Score Middays. Can't wait to hear what he has to say about Kyle Tucker, PCA, the bullpen situation, and of course, third base. All that straight ahead. It's Middays on the Score right here with Grody and Harris hanging out. Layla Rahimi, she just got the day off. She'll be back tomorrow.
10-10 time. And the pitch to Ian Happ, swinging a base hit into right. Brujan around third, heading home. Here comes the throw to the plate. Cubs win. Cubs win the ball game. Ian Happ, a game-winning single.
The Score Midday Show, 10-2 on 670 The Score.
Mark Grody, Marshall Harris hanging out. Pat Hughes on the call along with Ron Coomer. Zach Zabin, they did a fine job. I was listening to a lot of that game on the move because, well, it was 3 hours and 21 minutes. I had some stuff to do.
Old school.
I had to go to the grocery store and pick up some stuff. And I was like, I can't wait for this game to end because I don't know when this game is going to end. Joining us on the Circa Resort and Casino hotline right now is Cubs President of Baseball Operations, Jed Hoyer, CircaLasVegas.com. Honored to have Jed talked to us, especially after a game like that. And during our conversations with Jed, we want to remind you of his support for Lurie's Children's Hospital, ranked the number one children's hospital in Illinois by the U.S. News & World Report, located at 225 East Chicago Avenue in downtown Chicago. Jed, I'll start with this. What makes Lurie's so special to you?
You know, it's such a wonderful place, and they have so many incredible doctors that do so much work. And you know, my dad's a pediatrician and my mom was a nurse, you know, growing up. And so just kind of very close to my heart. And I think whenever you have kids, watching that kind of work and that kind of care is really special.
They're responsible for the care of those children who need help. You are responsible for a Cubs organization trying to get where it wants to go, namely the playoffs. And so far, so good. Could you have imagined that this would be the way things had gone to start the season, not only just the winning, but I know you talked and took a lot of grief for how you talked about the playing conditions at Wrigley Field. Seems like the Cubs are finding a way to play through it, if you will.
Yeah, no, it's been an impressive start. I think, you know, our schedule's been not incredibly hard. I think when you sort of look at the schedule at the beginning of the season, look who we're playing, you're like, oh, this is going to be a test right away. And I think our guys have answered that challenge. And listen, we're 25, you know, games into a 162 game season. So you can't kind of look around and admire it. You just have to keep grinding and keep playing. But it is impressive. I give our guys a lot of credit for, you know, we've had, you know, two times on the West Coast, hard teams, you know, some injuries, and these guys have just continued to be resilient. It's been a fun group to watch.
Jed, you've been here long enough to see some crazy occurrences at Wrigley Field, but what went down at Wrigley on Friday against Arizona was nuts. You just kind of throw everything out and let happen what happens. Last night, the 11-10 victory in 10 innings. What was your favorite part about last night?
You know, really, it was, you know, we've obviously, my favorite part was having a lead early and hoping we're going to hold it. But, you know, I think when you watch a team like the Dodgers, you can't make any mistakes against those guys. You know, we walked two guys. We walked Shohei and Mookie, and then obviously, you know, made a crucial error. You just can't give them extra outs. They're great players. You know, I mean, Freddie Freeman's a first out Hall of Famer. Like, when he comes up and drives in those runs, you can't be surprised. Like, we gave him those base runners. So you can't make those mistakes. But I thought fighting back against one of the best bullpens in baseball, you know, hitting a two-run homer against Vesia, homering against Scott, and then winning it in the 10th, I just thought that, you know, that's a hard game to win against their bullpen. And our guys, they kept fighting. And I will say that was, for me, it was just, you know, what I really liked about last night, honestly, was, you know, it's mid-April and there's, you know, sell-out crowd and it was electric. And I thought this, the Wrigley in general last night was it felt like something crazy was going to happen, just given how the fans were. And it was fun to see that in mid-April.
Judd, it was a big market game. That's what I called it, man. I mean, you've got two of the biggest fan bases squaring off. Dodgers fans were there in force inside the park and outside of the park. So it was a blast to watch that game and to take it in. You brought up some of the mistakes and the early mistakes. And obviously, we know what you guys are trying to do at third base. We know where you guys are coming from. But it hasn't been pretty so far with the platoon that you guys are doing, with Gage Workman having made a couple of errors. I know Miguel Brujan in that, I believe it was the Friday game where he scooped it, made a nice play scooping it, and then just kind of dropped the ball. What is the update on the third base situation? Is this what you'll continue to go with, and there's something that you want to settle on at that position?
Well, I think the ultimate hope is that, you know, Matt Shaw will you know, go down to Triple-A, kind of, you know, find his swing again and come back up. I mean, that's sort of the hope and the plan. But yeah, we have to do better. I don't think there's any way around it. You know, we can't, you know, we're not providing much offense out of that position right now, which is, that happens, but like we're providing poor defense. And I think that's really what's hurting us. And, you know, it's cost us, you know, you can't, like I said, you can't give these good teams outs late in games. We've made a bunch of, like, you know, crucial, you know, late inning, you know, mistakes over there. So we have to tighten it up defensively. And I think about our team and the way we're built, and this run scoring has been great, but ultimately we're not going to be able to score runs at this rate all year. We're built to be a really good, clean defensive team. You know, we've got a bunch of guys that have won Gold Gloves and don't make mistakes, and, you know, it destabilizes us, you know, and we have to cut out those mistakes.
And I'm sorry to Vidal Brujan. This is the third time I've done it. I'm just going to dismiss myself, Marshall. Go ahead.
No, you're good. Yeah. Jed, I want to ask you more about that third base situation. I know Matt Shaw hit a home run last night, his first hit down at AAA since being sit down. What is it specifically that you're looking for when you say working on things with his swing? What is it that you want to see from him, and what does that timeline look like? When's the earliest he could be back?
Yeah, I mean, so I think he got in some, it's a hard league and it's hard competition, you know, we've been facing. And I think that, you know, through his struggles, he started to make subtle adjustments to survive, to make contact, to do different things. And like he kind of got away from his mechanics and what's made him good. And that's a pretty natural thing and normal thing for a young player. Yeah, as we sort of told him when he got sent out. I mean, like, look at, you know, we sent out Anthony Rizzo, we sent out Ian Happ, we sent out Kyle Schwarber, Javi Baez. Like, all these guys have gone up and down. It's hard to come up and just stay. And he needs to, you know, both mentally, I think it's like, I think he is confident, but kind of get back to where he was. And I think, and then I think mechanically eliminate some of those bad habits that he got in. Like I said, getting in survival mode up here, facing great pitching every night, trying to put the ball in play. That's not who he is. He's a guy who drives the ball, who extra base hits. And I think that, you know, he's kind of got in some bad habits. And once he gets out of those habits in AAA, I think we'll see him up here again soon.
Yeah, man. And you're able to talk about examples of the past of great Cubs players who came up, maybe were really great at first and then got sent back down. You know, Anthony Rizzo struggled early on. Ian Happ in recent era, we know he wasn't pleased, but that probably did him some good. So I know that you can give those examples as some context. Jed, got to ask you about Kyle Tucker. First of all, the home run he hit. I mean, this guy is just so impressive at the plate. The two-run jack in the eighth inning on a slider against a lefty after he'd seen the pitch already. I want to hear your thoughts on that at bat. And then please update us on where things are with potentially getting a long-term deal done with Kyle Tucker.
Yeah, that was, you know, that was probably the most impressive swing I think he's taken with us, in my opinion, just because, you know, he's facing an elite lefty in Vesia, you know, who doesn't give up damage to lefties. And, you know, he pulled his hands in on that swing and adjusted his swing and hit a homer in a clutch situation. And it was just, you know, it was just kind of one of those moments where we're like, well, that's why he's elite right there. You know, that was incredibly impressive. And he's been fun to watch. It's a low pulse in the box. I think his takes away are so impressive. He knows the strike zone. And, you know, I do think that, like, the one thing that probably sticks out for me more than anything with our offense so far is our decision-making has been really good. You know, Ian makes great decisions, Tucker, Saya, Bush, like that first four guys in the lineup are hard to pitch to. They're not going to chase. And I think when I sort of watch offenses that I admire, you know, especially in the playoffs, and you watch the elite offenses, that's what they do. They make you throw strikes. They don't get themselves out of the strike zone. And I think we've done a really good job of that. And, you know, some of the run scoring stuff won't be sustainable, but I think that the decision-making, I think, is kind of a sticky thing. And hopefully we can continue that. And, you know, listen, as far as long-term stuff, like, obviously we'd love to keep Kyle long-term, and who wouldn't want, you know, a player like that. And, you know, I think that I would keep any conversations we're having internal. You know, I think that, you know, it's hard to negotiate in season. I'm not sure what's going to happen with that. If we do have those conversations, we'll keep them internal. But I do think, obviously, like I said, he's really fun to watch. I think he has a huge impact on the entire team and entire offense. And like I said, he's a player that any team would want to have in the lineup.
Are you optimistic that there's a way you can keep him from reaching free agency? Because let's face it, it's a contract year, and right now every swing of the bat feels like it's gaining extra coins.
Yeah, I mean, listen, my sense is, and I think the single best recruiting tool that the Cubs have is last night, right? This is a really special place to play. It's an incredible city. It's an even better city in the summer, you know. And you know, listen, I think, you know, he's not going to have a shortage of suitors. You know, my hope is that Wrigley in Chicago become really special to him, and he realizes, like, there's not a better place to play in baseball. But yeah, it's not, you know, listen, he's not going to have a shortage of suitors given his talent level. And, you know, obviously, like I said, well, you know, it's not something we're obviously well aware of the situation, but, like, I think, you know, talking about it, you know, I've got a great relationship with his agency. And obviously if those conversations do have, we'll just kind of keep him tight to the vest.
It feels like to us that's one part of the conversation is you convincing Kyle Tucker to stay here. How much of it, though, is you saying, look at that guy and what he's doing, convincing ownership to open up that checkbook a little bit larger, since, as we know, you guys have never signed a player to a $200 million deal, let alone what Kyle Tucker will probably end up getting?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's, you know, I think my job in with every transaction is to sort of lay out a case for why it makes sense. So I think that's my job, you know, is always to, you know, to make the right long-term and short-term decision for the Cubs and to make a case for it. And I think, you know, our owners are great about, you know, when I take something to them that I think I've spent time on, it makes sense, and we researched. And, you know, listen, like, there's a lot of work that goes into any kind of transaction that big, and they've always been super receptive.
All right, we'll let that settle in, and Jed, and then we'll ask you again in 2 weeks, okay?
Yeah, perfect. Yeah.
It's going to keep having this conversation, and we will. Yeah. The other guy, to a lesser degree, but maybe just as important, would be Pete Crow Armstrong. Is there anything, same rules there? Will there be discussion in season with PCA on a potential contract extension? What's going on there?
Yeah, I mean, same thing. I wouldn't talk about the details. Obviously, it came out that we had conversations in spring training, and we did. And, you know, they're very amicable. And, you know, like I said, if we do revisit it, I would keep it quiet. But, like, he's a great kid. I think he has a chance to be a great player. And, obviously, we had those discussions in spring. We wouldn't have had those discussions if he wasn't a guy that we wanted to extend beyond our current control. And, you know, I think with Pete, I think that, you know, we're kind of like with Matt Shaw. We talked about Matt Shaw, like, you know, last year, Pete came up. He came up in 23 and struggled. He came up last year and struggled. You obviously adjusting to the league. I think we're starting to see, you know, what he can be. I think he's maturing at the plate. Now, obviously, I think everyone can see what he does on defense and what he does on the bases. But watching that maturity, it happens quickly sometimes. And, we watched it with him last year, and hopefully we're watching the same thing with Shaw later this summer.
Jed, on PCA, it seems to me from watching the games that, and I know it's probably not as simplified as what I'm about to say, but it seems like you guys are saying to PCA, you go out there and just be you. If you need to swing at the first pitch every time and be active with the bat and swinging for the downs and swing for the big homers and hitting later in the lineup, is that kind of – am I onto something there philosophically with Pete Crow or Armstrong?
Not as much offensively, but in personality-wise, absolutely. Like, I think that, Pete is – he's emotional, he's aggressive, he's eccentric, and I just think that, that's who he is, and that's who we want him to be. Like, I love him for it. It's wonderful. And, I think that it's a nice counter to some of the other guys on the team who are just kind of more stoic and serious. And so, to me, it's like you be you. You're a great defender. You're a great base runner. Like, you're developing as a hitter. Like, go be yourself and don't try to be those other guys. Other guys had a different path. They have different personalities. And, I do think that, offensively, I think he's making better decisions at the plate. He's learning the league, he's learning what he can hit and what he can't hit. And, that's a process that these other guys have been through. But during that process, don't try to be someone else. Like, I admire Nico and Dansby and Ian and those guys so much. Their personalities are their personalities. Pete needs to be different. That's who he is. And I think that the whole team's kind of embraced that.
All right, so the Cubs, your team is leading the league in runs scored. They lead the league in the major leagues, I'm saying, in run differential at plus 42. Meanwhile, the bullpen has been an issue. We saw more of that last night. I want to know what your overall stance is. Gavin Hollowell comes in right out of AAA and gives two very good innings. Porter Hodge looks great, but at the same time, you have other guys who are up and down. And I'm just wondering, with Brad Keller, the way he pitched, how much are you monitoring on a day-to-day basis what this bullpen is seeing? We've seen kind of a short lease, so we're trying to understand, like, Javier Saad makes a start last night. What is your overall vision for how this team is going to look in the coming weeks with Assad coming back, with Jordan Wicks getting sent back down, and you kind of being on this roller coaster and really a merry-go-round with the relievers in the first half of the season?
Well, I mean, some of the merry-go-round has been performance, and some of the merry-go-round is just a natural churn of baseball in 2025. I mean, it's just, you look at every team, and every team is like churning through the bottom of their bullpen. That's why you really want to have guys with options in your bullpen, because you just have to constantly be going to get fresh arms. It's just that how the game, unfortunately, is how the game is played now. Like, we're making transactions almost every night. But yeah, we have to tighten it up in the bullpen. I think we've had a number of games and performances where I think we pitched really well, but like we've been just plagued by these 5+ run innings. We've done it like 3 or 4 different times this year, and that's the part that we have to tighten up. And normally they're started with walks. Honestly, we've walked too many guys in the bullpen. Brad Keller has been excellent for us all year. Last night wasn't his best, but he's been good. Porter had the bad outing coming in relief of Wicks. I think generally those guys have been good. But there's undeniable. We have to stop having those kind of innings, and we're playing good teams and we're playing offenses that make you pay for every mistake. But yeah, we have to tighten up those big runs. We had a game on Sunday in Arizona. We had the Friday game against Arizona. We had the game last night. Like, we're just giving up too many 5+ run innings, and our blowups have been bad. And we'll keep working on it. The bullpen's going to be something we work on all summer. I think like most teams, you just got to keep on shuffling guys through, and it's a volatile enough area where all of a sudden you can hit on a guy here, a guy there, and then next thing it solidifies. So we'll keep working on it. Obviously we see the same issues. We're not going to be able to come back from 3 and 4 down over and over, and we just have to do a better job of pitching in those situations and not throwing strikes, not making errors, and not putting extra pressure on those guys.
The good news is your opponent's also complaining about giving up too many five-run-plus innings. Jed, we appreciate you stopping by and visiting with us a little here on Score Middays.
Awesome. Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
See you, Jed. Take care.
Yep. That was Jed Hoyer, the Cubs president of baseball operations, joining Mark Grody Marshall here on The Score. We will react to what he had to say and continue the conversation on the other side. You are listening to Middays on 670 The Score.
Obviously, we'd love to keep Kyle long-term, and who wouldn't want, you know, a player like that? And, you know, I think that I would keep any conversations we're having internal. It's hard to negotiate in season. I'm not sure what's going to happen with that. If we do have those conversations, we'll keep him internal. But I do think, obviously, like I said, he's really fun to watch. I think he has a huge impact on the entire team and entire offense.
Are you optimistic that there's a way you can keep him from reaching free agency?
He's not going to have a shortage of suitors. You know, my hope is that Wrigley in Chicago become really special to him, and he realizes like there's not a better place to play in baseball.
Vibes. That's what we're selling here. We're selling Kyle Tucker on vibes here in the city of Chicago. Back on the Midday Show along with Mark Grody. I'm Marshall Harris. Layla Rahimi with the day off, and whoa, that was bleak. I'm going to be honest. Listen, at the beginning of the season, back to the roller coaster thing, Breaking I said, bolt. Enjoy Kyle Tucker like you enjoy your favorite amusement park. You got the season pass. And
the fast pass.
And the fast pass. Isn't there like a second fast pass now where you can just skip the fast pass people?
Actually, no. They used to. Now, when I went last year, you get a time. It's like a date. I have a date with the Raging Bull. I have a date with Joker, whomever, whatever.
Joker's a good one.
This is a really good one. Whoever you have your date with, you meet at that time. At least that's what I had last year at Great America.
I just, hearing him say that, Mark, Jed Hoyer, the president of baseball operations for the Cubs, was just on with us. You can use the Rewind feature in the Odyssey app to go listen to the entire conversation. But we tried to press him a little bit on Kyle Tucker and the possibility of getting something done. And my whole point has always been this. One, you have to convince Kyle Tucker that Wrigley Field is where he wants to play the rest of his career. Two, you have to convince Tom Ricketts that Kyle Tucker is the guy you want to be in the outfield at Wrigley Field for the rest of his career. I don't know that Jed Hoyer can bridge that gap in this, what could be his final season, but it doesn't look like it's going to be his final season based on the success the Cubs have had early in the season.
Yeah, I mean, I hope so. I hope Jed is still here. The fact that he said, if we have those discussions, the internal discussions, they're not going to share it with us. If. So they haven't had those discussions yet. And you're right. It hit me the same way. Does he love what we have to offer here in Chicago? That's why I am here to try to make him happy at all times. There was a game earlier this season where he had trouble negotiating a ball in right field because it's awkward when the ball goes up against the padding and it popped out of his mitt. And I was like, oh no, he hates us. He hates Wrigley Field because it is a difficult place to get used to playing either left field or right field for sure. So I was like, Kyle, come talk to me. I'm going to tell you about some of the right fielders that have played in this. Andre Dawson, my God.
The Hawk.
Sammy Sosa, my God.
Sammy.
Keith Marlin. My God. I mean,
there's
a lot of guys that have had a lot of success play. So that's what I'm saying. I'm going to put it out there right now, Kyle. I know that you're listening right now. And, you know, when it was cold, I was like, oh, God, he hates us, man. This isn't Houston where it's warm all the time. I'm like,
they have a retractable roof.
Yeah. You just wait till the summer, though, pal. That's going to be the real key. If we're really trying to sell Chicago to him just the way we always try to sell Chicago, it starts in June. Not this month, not next month. June. So the Cubs better be good in June, and the weather better not mess with us in June, and Kyle Tucker is just going to absolutely love us. And Kyle, I invite you to call me. My phone number is... No.
At
any time, man. You need a little talk about... You know, I've been in this city for a long time. Marshall and I both live in downtown Chicago. We will have lunch with you. We will tell you everything that you need to know about how great this city is.
Meet you on the lakefront. We don't live far from... I can walk to the lakefront.
Wait, what are you going to say to him? What is great about the city of Chicago?
I like the pressure. I mean, I like Robbie Triano from behind the glass.
Pretend I'm Kyle Tucker. I'm hitting dingers.
See, now here's the thing. This is up to the reporters at Wrigley Field. I don't know Kyle Tucker yet. I don't know what moves him. I don't know what he likes. That's
I know he's a pretty quiet guy. He's pretty reserved.
He seems like a he shall not be moved kind of guy.
Okay. I will take him to Millennium Park. There'll be a nice symphony going on. I think that's a good place to start. We'll keep him away from the bean. We don't need kids splashing him with water and getting fingerprints all over the bean. I don't want any of that going on. So we're going to take him to some low-key places. So I think some sort of evening orchestra in the Big Shell here, which is very close to us where we are broadcasting from right now.
I have a follow-up question. Will you bring him tavern style or deep dish pizza?
Well, you know, the hipster thing to say these days is tavern style pizza.
Oh, but you're not a hipster, are you?
I'm not a hipster. I love tavern style pizza, but it's, you know, I just always find it funny that people that live in Chicago like to, it sounds cool to push back on deep dish. Oh yeah, well, real Chicagoans, we're into tavern style pizza. Give him what Chicago is known for to the tourists, okay?
You don't want him to be a tourist. That's the problem. Right now, he is a tourist. He's here for a season. You want to make sure he is a permanent resident of Chicago.
Well, maybe, and again, this goes with not knowing Kyle Tucker. I need some sort of think piece on, like, the real personality, like the silly questions that you ask, like, what's your favorite food? I need the basics on Kyle Tucker, because I have never seen, and this is really good for baseball, a gentleman that is as measured as Kyle Tucker is, the highs and the lows, and so you can't tell, or maybe he just hates it here.
You know what? You know who would help him, convince him to stay in Chicago?
What?
Alex Bregman, after signing a 6 or 7 year deal. That would probably be helpful.
Here's another thing too. Bears. Maybe that will keep him here. If I could really, I'd need probably 10 minutes with him. And I think I could convince him that staying here for the Bears is a healthy idea. Kyle, you see it? Have you met Caleb Williams? Have you met him?
Again, okay. I'm sure he's been to a Houston Texans game and it's not cold there. It's very much cold.
Yeah. Would you give him all the Bears?
Oh my!
Just like your entire Bear system.
I like that. I like that.
Do I break my Bears rules for him? Okay, Kyle, look at me. 10 Bears, if that's what it takes. I am selling myself out.
Who has 10 Bears? Who has 10 Bears?
I don't think there's anybody currently with 10 Bears. I mean, Cole Kmet is really coming close, man.
How many Bears does TJ Edwards have?
TJ Edwards is getting up there now with the second contract. And what he said, by the way, and I got to play some of that later for you guys, what he said about playing in Chicago, he probably just got another half a Bear.
That is at 125. You can hear what TJ Edwards has to say. And Mark Grody's very specific reaction to it. But up next, we've got Jake Butt stopping by to talk about, well, the Bears, who hopefully will not be the butt of any jokes after they draft in this year's NFL draft starting tomorrow. Jake Butt up next on Score Middays. Mark Grody, Marshall Harrison.